When I was a young man during the McCarthyism period, people were trying to disbar lawyers and disbar communists and not allow them to practice the profession because they didn't sufficiently believe in democratic principles. I fought it then, and I'm going to fight it now. More than 5,000 law students, law professors, and lawyers have signed a petition trying to disbar Senators Cruz and Hawley for the speeches they made on the floor of the United States Senate, in one case calling for a commission to investigate the election, and another case calling for votes to be taken against certifying the election. I disagreed with their speeches, and so did the majority of the House and Senate. They rejected them in the marketplace of ideas. But disbarring lawyers, disbarring senators for exercising their rights under the First Amendment and the Speech and Debate Clause, now that's un-American. And you'll hear why on The Dirt Show. More than 5,000 law students and law professors from universities like Harvard, Yale, and other elite universities, more than 5,000 have signed a petition calling for the disbarment of Senators Ted Cruz and Hawley. This petition tells us more about what's happening to cancel culture and the Constitution of the United States than any other event in recent times. I thought that when Harvard University fired Ron Sullivan, a dean of a college, because they disapproved of, or many of the students disapproved of, who his client was, Harvey Weinstein, I thought we had reached the depths of cancel culture. But this is so much worse. These 5,000 students and faculty represent the future of our legal profession and the future of our Constitution, because it's the legal profession that protects our Constitution. It's lawyers who stand between the government and individuals. Lawyers who are the ones who prevent tyranny, whether you agree with them or disagree with them, whether they're lawyers who represent good guys or bad guys. Lawyers stand at the bastions of democracy. And yet, we have thousands of students, many prominent professors, Professor Lawrence Tribe, professor of constitutional law, and so many others, who are calling for the disbarment of two of their alumni. Ted Cruz was my student who went to Harvard Law School. Senator Hawley went to Yale Law School. And yet his fellow alum and students and faculty are calling for their disbarment. Now, what are the grounds for the disbarment? When I read this petition, my mind went back 60 years, even more than 60 years. My mind went back to the period of McCarthyism, during which I grew up. When I was in college, communists were being disbarred. Lawyers who represented communists were being attacked and disciplined. Let me read you from the words of the petition. And those of you who are old enough to remember will remember these words. These were the exact words used to justify why a person who was a communist or a socialist or a leftist or a fellow traveler or a pinko could not be a member of the bar, because they didn't stand up for the principles of democracy. And if you don't stand up for the principles of democracy, you can't be a member of the bar. Well, listen to what this petition, circa 2021, says. It talks about disbarring lawyers and senators because in the speech on the Senate, they made baseless objections to the will of the people. Baseless objections to the will of the people. How many times have I made objections to the will of the people when I've challenged the constitutionality of statutes, where I've challenged convictions, both of innocent and guilty people? Yeah, I make objections to the will of the people. That's part of what lawyers do. You object to the will of the people, and you demand that the Constitution overrides the will of the people. The Constitution wasn't written for majorities. It wasn't written for the will of the people. It was written for dissenters, those who don't agree with the will of the people. They accuse these two lawyers, these two senators, of betraying the very democratic institutions they were charged with protecting and improving as public citizens. Well, what if they disagree with the institutions? What if they think the institutions have not been serving the people? I'm not saying I agree with these senators. I don't. I was very upset at the speeches made on the floor of the Senate by some Republicans. But that's not the criteria, what I think or what you think of the content of their speech. Their speeches are protected by the Constitution. There's a provision of the Constitution called the Speech and Debate Clause that says that speeches made on the Senate shall not be questioned in any place, which includes, of course, bar associations. They claim that a person who doesn't improve the democracy of America are definitionally unfit for the legal profession. They have no respect for the courts, they say, because they've challenged the decision of lower courts. Oh my God, how many times have I done that? I challenge the death penalty every day. Today, I am trying desperately to prevent the execution tomorrow of a woman who is mentally ill and who committed a terrible, terrible crime. I tried and failed to prevent the execution of a man a few weeks ago. Am I defying the will of the courts? Every single court said they should be executed. Every single one. And I say that every single one of those courts was wrong. I said in Bush versus Gore that the United States Supreme Court was wrong. I wrote a book about it. I trashed the Supreme Court. I attacked the justices. Some of them my friends. But I attacked them. That's my right as a lawyer. That's my obligation as a lawyer. Don't tell me that I have to have respect for the courts in order to be a practicing lawyer. To be a practicing lawyer, I have to abide by the rules of the courts. But don't tell me who I have to respect or disrespect. That's my personal choice and my personal decision, and it's not a grounds for disbarment. The petition says that they have shown they have no respect for the American public and our democracy. What they were claiming, falsely perhaps, but what they were claiming was that the American public's views were being distorted by the election results. They were wrong, but the Constitution gives them the right to be wrong. That's the essential core of the First Amendment and the Speech and Debate Clause. You have the right to be wrong. Obviously, nobody is going to attack you if you're right. But in a democracy, the right to be wrong, the right to be mistaken, the right to challenge everything is the core of what separates us from other countries. Not disbarring these two lawyers, these two senators, not disbarring these two senators, the petition says, will send an unmistakable message to aspiring lawyers and to the American public that lawyers cannot be trusted with the task of protecting, let alone improving, our sacred democracies, and that lawyers can denigrate democratic institutions with impunity. You know what this reminds me of? I represented lawyers in the Soviet Union who were disbarred and threatened with disbarment and threatened with criminal prosecution because they didn't sufficiently stand up for democracy, by which the Soviet Union meant communism. In South Africa, lawyers were disbarred because they didn't stand up for South African definition of democracy, which meant apartheid. In China today, in Hong Kong today, lawyers are being disbarred and threatened and imprisoned because they don't believe in the institutions of Chinese democracy. In Iran today, lawyers are being executed because they don't believe in the concept of Ayatollah's democracy. Is that the path we really want to go down? Do we want to follow the path of these repressive countries? Do we want to go back to McCarthyism? I fought against McCarthyism. When I was a young man, when I was in high school, when I was in college, I was the student government president of Brooklyn College when Brooklyn College was firing professors because they didn't sufficiently believe in current concepts of democracy. The essence of democracy is you have the right to oppose democracy in a democracy. You have a right to call for a change of government. You have a right to call for a change in the courts. You have a right to oppose everything that America stands for, as long as you do it without breaking the law, without taking actions that violate the law. That's what democracy is all about. John Quincy Adams stood up and defended murderers, the people who in the Boston Massacre shot down unarmed American patriots. He did it because he believed in the rule of law. He didn't do it because he believed necessarily in the innocence of the people who he was defending. I have to tell you, this petition would result in the disbarment of John Quincy Adams. It would probably result in the disbarment of Abraham Lincoln. It would probably result in the disbarment of Clarence Darrow and of Thurgood Marshall. Thurgood Marshall stood up and opposed the law, opposed the courts, stood up and fought against what South Carolina and Mississippi and Alabama regarded as democracy. He stood up against those institutions. And he became a justice of the United States Supreme Court, where he served with great distinction. This petition is so retrograde. It is so dangerous. It is so reminiscent of McCarthyism that I will fight as hard as I can against it. And what's so disappointing is so many of my colleagues and friends at the Harvard Law School, at the Yale Law School, support this petition. They may even have written it, for all I know. It's filled with citations and references to legal precedents. But it's nonsense. At its core, it says you will be disbarred if you challenge democratic institutions as we define democratic institutions. If you think democracy requires a commission to be appointed to evaluate the investigation, then you're not fit to serve as a member of the bar or as a United States senator. If this petition becomes reality, if these lawyers are disbarred, this marks the end of the legal profession in America as an independent source and check and balance against the tyranny of government. Look, we may not like these lawyers. We may not like these senators. I'm a liberal Democrat. I don't vote for Republicans like Hawley and Cruz. They represent a different point of view from my own. But disbarring them because they stood up on the floor of the Senate and challenged an election? You know, Democrats have challenged elections too. Members of Congress challenged the 2016 election, the 2000 election, previous elections as well. Back in the 1900s, in 19th century rather, we saw various challenges to elections, starting with Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson and Tilden Hayes and others. That's part of democracy. Now, what happened on Wednesday in the Capitol is not part of democracy. So there's a very sharp distinction between using violence, which is punishable and should be punishable, and the people who engaged in violence should be punished to the limits of the law, particularly those who endangered or took human life. But our Constitution sharply distinguishes between a speaker who stands up and says, go to the Capitol. How many speakers have said that? How many suffragettes, civil rights leaders, union leaders, members of the Ku Klux Klan? It doesn't have to be good guys. It can be bad guys. How many good guys and bad guys stood up in Washington, D.C. and said, go to the Capitol, fight back, demand, insist, we have to be strong? That's what rhetorical speakers do. And that's what the Supreme Court of the United States has said in Brandenburg versus Ohio and various other decisions over the generations, is legitimate advocacy. Strong words, fighting words, passionate words, words that may even inspire conduct. And maybe even sometimes people will engage in unlawful conduct. But as long as the speaker doesn't directly call for unlawful conduct, and nobody can read the speech made by President Trump as calling specifically for deliberate, willful misconduct. He didn't say go into the Capitol. He didn't say break the windows. He didn't do any of those things. There have been speakers who've done that. I defended a speaker who did that. I defended Bruce Franklin at Stanford University when he made a speech saying, take over the computation center, essentially destroy the computation center because they're helping in the war effort against the Vietnam War. And who do you think was on my side when I defended Bruce Franklin? The American Civil Liberties Union. Where is the American Civil Liberties Union today? They should be standing in strong opposition to this petition. They should be standing in strong opposition to trying to impeach a president for making a speech that is protected by the Constitution. I am angry. I am frightened. I am determined to fight back against this McCarthyism, this modern McCarthyism that is coming from an institution that I love and taught at for 50 years, Harvard Law School. I am engaged in a dialogue with my former colleagues and professors, and I welcome a dialogue by students. I welcome anybody from the Harvard faculty or the Yale faculty who signed that petition, come on this show and defend your conduct. Show how your petition is different from petitions that were filed in the 1950s. You know, Harvard Law School itself did not have a distinguished record when it came to McCarthyism in the 50s. There were instances where people were kept off the Harvard Law Review because they had refused to testify in front of the House Un-American Activities Committee or other committees that were fighting against communism. Look, I hate communism. I was brought up hating Stalin, hating communism. I understand that communists, if they were to take over the country, would deny us our freedom of speech. And yet I've always defended the rights of communists and lawyers who defend communists to spew their poison, to advocate in the marketplace of ideas. Finally, they were allowed to advocate in the marketplace of ideas. And you know what happened? They lost. You know what happened when Senators Hawley and Senator Cruz were allowed to speak on the floor of the Senate? They lost. The marketplace of ideas is open and healthy. It doesn't need to be shut down by modern-day McCarthyites who would disbar lawyers because they didn't think the lawyers sufficiently supported their concept of democracy. Yeah, I'm angrier today than I've been on any other version of the Dirt Show. And I'm going to continue to fight against this McCarthyism as I have for so many years of my life, because the future of the country is at stake. When young students in their 20s are calling for lawyers to be disbarred, are calling for presidents to be impeached, are calling for other draconian measures based on the exercise of constitutional rights and free speech, I'm going to fight back. When people want to distort the 25th Amendment to turn it against the president, who's perfectly capable of governing, he's not incapable, he can govern, he can sign petitions, he can make peace in the Middle East, he can do what presidents do, you just don't like what he's doing, and you invoke the 25th Amendment, that doesn't just stretch the Constitution, it tears it up, it rips it apart when you ignore the speech and debate clause, which is such an important part of our system of checks and balances, and when you compromise freedom of speech under the First Amendment. So we're seeing a trend. Harvard, Yale, Twitter, YouTube, other social media, Rumble is being criticized. Parler is being taken off sites because it supports free speech. You know, it's so interesting. When I was growing up, it was the liberals and the left that supported free speech. Why? Because they were the ones that were being denied free speech. Today, it's the conservatives who are supporting free speech. Why? Because they're the ones who are being denied free speech. Free speech for me, but not for thee. It's about time liberals and conservatives got together and said, free speech for everybody. Yes, everybody. People you disagree with. If you're a person of the left, you have to give free speech to people on the right. If you're a person of the right, you have to accept free speech for people on the left. Otherwise, we have no free speech. Free speech for me, but not for thee, means no free speech. It means temporarily you get to speak, but as soon as you are in the minority, you get your speech suppressed. So we are in a struggle for the heart and soul of America, for the heart and soul of our Constitution. Let us not go down the path of McCarthyism. Let us not go down the path of the former Soviet Union, of China, of South Africa, of Iran, and of other repressive regimes. Let's trust the American public. Make your speech. Let it be judged in the marketplace. We are a sensible people. There are some people that won't be sensible. They will go down and break into the Capitol. That's why we have laws, criminal laws, that punish that kind of behavior. But that's why we have the First Amendment, to assure that nobody's speech is suppressed. Oh, you hear all the time, it's like shouting fire in a crowded theater. No, 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 it's not. Shouting fire in a crowded theater is not a message to the brain. It's not an invitation to think or debate. When you hear the shout of fire, you don't say, let me consider the alternatives. Maybe there's a fire. Maybe there's not. Maybe I should wait around and see if the fire people come. Or maybe I shouldn't. Maybe the person shouting fire has an agenda. No, no, no. When you hear fire, you run. The shout of fire is not a message to the brain. It's a message to the legs and to the adrenaline. And it's so insulting to the American public to say it's like shouting fire when a president or a senator makes a speech. When a president or a senator makes a speech, he's inviting you to think about it, to reject it. Cruz and Hawley didn't shout fire in the middle of the Senate. President Trump didn't shout fire in Washington, D.C. He said, I want you to think about the election. I want you to make a decision. I want you to fight against what we think is something unfair. He may have been wrong. The senators may have been wrong. But we had an opportunity to consider and accept or reject, and we rejected. Nobody rejects fire in the theater. So the absurd analogy invoked by Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes ought to be taken out of our vocabulary. I don't want to censor anything. I don't want to censor it. You can say shouting fire in the theater, but think of what you're saying. It's not analogous to what happened. What's analogous to what happened is if somebody were handing out a leaflet in front of a theater saying, you know, there's a movie playing in there. You ought to think about not going into that theater because here's some information we have that maybe they didn't satisfy their fire instructions and maybe there's a safety issue. Here's a pamphlet, and there are opposing pamphlets, people telling you to go in. That's the analogy, not shouting fire in the theater. So let's not trivialize dissent. Let's not trivialize the First Amendment. Let's stand together, conservatives and liberals alike, on behalf of our Constitution, our First Amendments, our freedom, and our liberty. That's the position of the Dirt Show. If you have a different view, I want to hear it on the Dirt Show. Our first call today is from Gary in Florida.
Hello, Professor. This is Gary from Miami. I call you a lot because I really respect your opinions, but I also disagree with them a lot. But I so respect them that I call and leave you messages. So here's a question for you, because we've been thinking a lot about this whole First Amendment question and online platforms. And the question is, when does a statement go from what is free speech to conspiracy to commit a crime or organizing to commit a crime? So I can say, you know, I disagree with such and such a person. You know, I don't like, you know, maybe Mike Pence or someone. But then when I start talking about going to the Capitol and hanging them, I mean, doesn't that cross a line where it's no longer free speech, but it's conspiracy? Thanks, and I look forward to your comments.
It's a great question. It's a question that obviously we have dealt with for many, many, many years. The case that I think comes closest to it is in the aftermath of the horrible assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, the prime minister of Israel. They prosecuted a rabbi who had called on God to kill Rabin because Rabin was giving away the land of the Jewish people, whatever absurd concept he had in mind. And he was convicted, but then the appellate court reversed the conviction, saying he called on God to kill Rabin, not on a human being to kill Rabin, so you can't convict him of inciting murder. When you have people say, kill the Jews, for example, that's constitutionally protected speech. If somebody, however, were to get up and say, kill a particular person and give the address, that happened. With abortion doctors, where the name and address of abortion doctors was given out over social media with directions to go to their house and kill them, and he was killed, in fact. And that, to me, crosses the line away from free speech. But general rhetoric, you know, do this, do that, I don't think so. Hang Pence, it's a close question. It's a close question. I think it was meant rhetorically, but it's a close question. If somebody were to be prosecuted for that, to me, that would not mean the end of the First Amendment. But it would if people were prosecuted for just yelling rhetoric and calling for general lawlessness or whatever. That's, again, advocacy, which falls on the protected side of the First Amendment. Our next call is from Casper in Denver.
This is Casper from Denver. In light of Google and probably Apple banning Parler on the grounds that Parler messages on Parler are promulgating violence, does Parler have a legal case against them? Because they're not doing the same against, say, Facebook, which there have been violent messages going on. I also think that Parler might have a Section 230. I think that's the statute. Defense against this, but is it similar to your case against CNN that or your libel case that people who, if they're not taking down the other false things and by leaving the accusation against you standing, that implies validation and truth. What do you think about Parler in this case?
Well, first of all these social media are private companies, so they're not specifically bound by the First Amendment, but Section 230 gives them protection under the law. And I think they lose their protection when they start picking and choosing what to put on the air. Remember that 230 doesn't prevent you from suing YouTube if YouTube does something wrong. That only protects YouTube if somebody on its site says something that's defamatory or in any other way subject to a lawsuit. So there is some legal vulnerability, but it's not unconstitutional for the platforms to take down Parler. There may be some antitrust violations. I'm not so sure. Look, these are hard, hard questions. Certainly, a website can say we're not going to allow anything illegal, child pornography, direct incitement to violence. But if it's legal and constitutionally protected, my own personal view is that these sites ought to let them go on. Because as you said, you pointed it out very well, if you take down one statement and saying it's untrue and you leave up other statements, it implies to the listener and the viewer that those statements must have been deemed to be true. And that's surely not the case. Very, very complicated issue. We'll be talking about this and other related issues on the Durst Show in the future. Our last call is from one of my favorite boroughs, Staten Island. Harry.
Hey, Mr. Dershowitz. My name's Harry Patterson from Staten Island. I'm calling in regards to this internet shutting down Trump all over the place. Are we going to take them to court? Is this going to be, or are the Democrats going to let this go on? This has to be stopped. This is like communist Russia and China. This is getting ridiculous. All right, thank you.
Well, of course, the difference between communist Russia and China is that in those countries, it's the government that suppresses free speech. And in the United States, it's the social media that suppresses free speech. These are such difficult issues because, yes, they're private companies, but they monopolize conversation and discussion. I don't know what the framers of the Constitution would have thought if they knew about the internet back in the 1780s and 1790s. But they didn't. And so they wrote a broad First Amendment. Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. But it doesn't mean that private parties can't abridge freedom of speech. So we're going to be debating these issues for a long time. But even if it's legal for them to do it, we can still show our disapproval. And by the way, sites like Rumble are competing with YouTube. This show was on Rumble, and it gets a lot of subscribers and viewers on Rumble. And I think a lot of the reason why people watch the Durst Show on Rumble is because they want to support a platform that doesn't censor. And I think that's the way of showing your support. Subscribe to the Durst Show on Rumble. We'll be back to these and related issues involving free speech. You know, the Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. We live in interesting times. There's no better time to have had a podcast than right now. And so I'm so happy to be able to converse with you 5 days a week. You hear my views, I hear your views. Let's continue to exchange views on The Dirt Show. An important part of The Dirt Show is your voice, your questions, your comments. Please call 24/7. The number is 216-710-0050. Keep your comments short and to the point. Again, the number for you to call 24/7 is 216-710-0050. Hard questions, criticisms, everything's fine. Just keep your questions short, and I'll answer them all on The Dirt Show.